exactly what she does.
"Where were you?" she whispers. "What happened?"
Art is one of the only classes we have together, because my school likes to keep the smart kids away from the not-smart kids, as if being in class with me might hurt Rebecca's test scores. In art, some of the not-smart kids get their revenge. I like that it gives me and Rebecca a chance to be together. Mr. K has put a car engine at the front of the room and has asked us to draw it in charcoal. He always says we're not supposed to talk while we're working, but as long as we're not too loud and we're getting our work done, he doesn't really mind. Rebecca's engine is turning out worse than mine, and I feel bad that this makes me feel better. I tell her that Justin and I escaped to the beach. I tell her it was an in-the-moment thing, and that it was wonderful.
"You should have asked me and Ben to come along," she says.
Ben is her boyfriend. He's smart, too. Justin doesn't like him at all. "Next time," I tell her. We both know it'll never happen, but we're okay with that. Our friendship doesn't need her to skip school, and it doesn't need Ben and Justin to get along. She and I have enough history that we don't need to make a whole lot happen in the present to be close.
"Wasn't it cold?" she asks.
"Too cold to swim," I say, "but warm enough to be there." She nods. Whatever I say to her usually makes sense. I'm just leaving out some of the details. I wonder if I'm supposed to meet him at his locker like yesterday. But lunchtime habit takes me to the cafeteria first, and there he is, at our usual spot. "Hey," I say. He nods. I sit down.
"Has anyone said anything to you about yesterday?" I ask. "I mean, you haven't gotten into any trouble, have you?"
He dips a French fry into some ketchup. That's all he's having for lunch.
"It's all good, I think," he says. "You?"
Rebecca was curious, but that's it so far.
"Rebecca? Curious? Now there's a shocker."
She said next time she and Ben want to go driving with us.
"I'm not sure Ben would let us inside his Mercedes. We'd have to take our shoes off first."
This one time, we went over to Ben's house, and he asked all of us to take off our shoes before we came inside. Justin and I found that hysterical.
"Doesn't he know that our socks are much nastier than our shoes?"
Justin asked. It became one of our jokes.
"Don't say anything to Rebecca," I make Justin promise.
He pretends to be zipping his lips. I relax. I go and get my lunch, and when I come back, Rebecca and some other friends are at the table, so Justin and I are part of the big conversation instead of having our own. When the bell rings, I ask him if he can do something after school, and he says no, he has to work. He says it like I should have his work schedule memorized, but Target sends the email to him, not me. I do not point this out. Instead, I remind myself that I am lucky I don't have to work yet. I remind myself that Justin hates his job. I remind myself that yesterday was all about a choice, but not every day allows us to make our own choices. The important thing is that when he had a chance, he chose me, and I have to hope that next time he'll choose me again. He texts me when he gets home from work. Two words.
"Long day."
I text him back one word. "Yeah." Patterns. The next day, I think about patterns. Or really, I think about ups and downs. I am used to ups and downs. Monday, when we were at the beach, was an up. I can see that. But now, it's neither an up nor a down. It's like we've disappeared from the chart. He's not mad at me, I can feel that. But his love has gone passive. I don't understand. And there's no one to talk to about it. Not Justin. Every time I mention the beach, it's like it never happened. Not Rebecca. If I told her more, it might sound crazier than it really is. Not my mom. She and I don't talk about ups or downs as a way of not having them. I know what he and I had on Monday is worth fighting for, but I have no one to fight, so I turn on myself instead. I know I wasn't imagining things, but I seem to have been sent back to my imagination now. Chapter 3. Thursday, I get to school first and wait for him. I don't think that much about it. It's just what I do.
"Jesus, Rhiannon,"
he says when he gets out of the car. I step aside as he pulls out his bag and slams the door. "What?" I ask.
"What?"
he mimics in a high, girly voice. It's a voice his bad moods like to use. "Crappy morning?" He shakes his head.
"Look, Rhiannon, just let me have 2 minutes, okay? All I ask is for 2 minutes each day where nobody wants anything from me, including you. That's all."
"I don't want anything from you," I protest. He looks at me, tired, and says,
"Of course you do."
He's right, I know. He's right, and that hurts a little. Space. I want a boyfriend, and he wants space. Since I have plenty of space, empty space, I guess it's hard for me to understand. "I'm sorry," I say.
"It's all right. It's just, you should see how you look there. Nobody else is just standing in the parking lot. I'm fine with seeing you, but when you stand like that, it's like you're waiting to pounce."
"I get it," I assure him. "I know." We're at the doors now. He sighs.
"I'll see you later."
I guess I'm not going to his locker. I guess that's okay.
"Sure you don't want to run away?" I ask.
I can feel the beach, the ocean, talking through me.
"You have to stop saying that," he says. "Keep giving me the idea, and one day I just might do it."
He's not asking me to come along. I get my books out of my locker, get ready for the day. My heart isn't in it, because my heart doesn't feel like it's anywhere near me. I hear a voice say, "Hey," and don't realize at first that it's talking to me. I turn to my left and see this small Asian girl looking at me. "Hey," I say back. I have no idea who she is.
"Don't worry, you don't know me," she says. "It's just, it's my first day here. I'm checking the school out, and I really like your skirt and your bag, so I thought, you know, I'd say hello, because, to be honest, I am completely alone right now."
"Join the club," I want to say. But the last thing this girl needs is a view of what's going through my mind. She already looks overwhelmed.
"I'm Rhiannon," I tell her, putting my books down and shaking her hand.
"Shouldn't there be someone showing you around, like a welcoming committee?" I feel this is totally Tiffany Chase's job. She seems to take pride in showing people around. I've never understood her.
"I don't know," the girl says. She still hasn't told me her name.
I tell her I'll be happy to take her to the office. I think she's supposed to sign in there anyway. This does not go over well.
"No," the girl says, like I've just threatened to call the police. "It's just, I'm not here officially. Actually, my parents don't even know I'm doing this. They just told me we're moving here, and I wanted to see it and decide whether I should be freaking out or not."
"Oh, you're definitely freaking out," I think. But I don't say that, because it will only freak her out more. Instead, I say, "That makes sense. So you're cutting school in order to check school out?"
"Exactly."
"What year are you?"
"A junior."
That's funny. She seems like a freshman. But if she's a junior, I figure there's nothing wrong with her tagging along with me today. I can pretend I'm Tiffany Chase for a few hours. It'll give me something to think about besides Justin.
So am I tell her. Let's see if we can pull this off. Do you want to come around with me today?
I'd love that.
She seems genuinely excited. It's a good reminder that sometimes it's easy to make someone happy. Maybe it's easier with strangers. I'm not sure. Maybe it's easier with someone who isn't asking you for something. The girl's name is Amy, and it's almost funny how easily she fits in with my friends. I'd be awful at meeting so many new people at once, but she gets it. Tiffany Chase sees me showing her around and looks pissed.
What's her problem? Amy asks.
She usually gets first dibs on being tour guide, I say.
I like this version better.
I know I shouldn't really take satisfaction from that, but I do. Like I'm so desperate to be good at something that I'll take whatever I can get. I do not share this thought with Amy. I don't see Justin at our usual time and place between first and second period, but he's there unexpectedly between second and third. I wonder if he went out of his way to make up for it. We don't have a chance to talk or anything, but at least I get to see him, and I get to see that he doesn't look too angry. In math class, Amy starts passing me notes. At first, I figure she just has a question, or maybe she's telling me she's had enough and she's going to leave next period. But instead, it's chatty, telling me that class here is just as boring as class back at her real school, asking me where I got my skirt, and whether there are any boys I like, and if I think there are any boys she would like. We go back and forth like this a few times. She picks up almost immediately on some of Ms. Fraser's mannerisms, and is pretty good at making fun of them. She talks like a nun, but instead of God, she's talking about trigonometry. I wonder what her habit looks like. A rhombus? I'm having fun, but it's also making me a little sad, because it's making me realize that I haven't really made a new friend since I started dating Justin. It's like since he and I have been together, I've only seen the same people, and less of them. I need this new girl to come out of nowhere in order to have someone to pass notes with. She comes with me to lunch. We put our stuff down at the table, and Preston goes crazy about all the buttons on her bag, asking her all these questions about Japanese comics. Amy seems flustered, and I'm hoping that Preston is showing his big gay self enough that she doesn't think he's flirting. When Justin gets to the table, I notice he's got something on his mind. I introduce him to Amy, and he gives her the Justin nod. Then he tells me he left his wallet at home. I say it's not a problem and ask him what he wants. He says French fries, but I get him a cheeseburger, too. When I hand them over, he thanks me, and I know he means it. Even with Amy there, it feels like we're all falling into our usual lunchtime routine. Preston asks her about another comic thing, but instead of answering, she turns to me and asks me how far it takes to get to the ocean from here. The word ocean makes me look at Justin, but it's like he hasn't heard, like his mind is stuck on cheeseburger.
It's so funny you should say that, I tell Amy. We were just there the other day. It took about an hour or so.
Justin is next to Amy, across from me. She turns her head and asks him,
"Did you have a good time?"
He doesn't seem to have heard, so I say, "It was amazing."
"Did you drive?"
she asks Justin. This time, he hears her.
"Yes, I drove," he says.
"We had such a great time," I chime in. And by saying that, I get to hold on to it a little longer. It's like Justin and I have this secret,
and it's sitting there in front of everyone else, but nobody else can see it. Neither of us is going to point it out. It remains ours, only ours. I don't mind that. I can tell Amy wants to ask more. I remind myself that she's not a new friend. She's just a visitor. She's only here for today. Justin, meanwhile, has gone back to eating. He has nothing more to say about the thing that means so much to me. Amy shadows me for the rest of the day and keeps as quiet as a shadow. I imagine what it must be like to look into the future and see yourself living in a new place. I've never done that. I've always been here, anchored by parents who never search out change, accompanied by all the other people who fear they'll never leave. For so many years, the idea of living somewhere else was about the same to me as the idea of living in a fairy tale kingdom. There were places that existed as stories and places that existed as life, and I was taught to never confuse the two. It wasn't until Justin and I became a real couple and my sister left town that I started to wonder not only about what came next, but where. I don't want to picture us doing the same things in the same place 10 years or even 2 years from now. But when I try to picture us anywhere else, it's hard to do. We both like to pull at the anchor, but the anchor is pretty strong. As I do my work in English class, I imagine switching places with Amy. I don't even know where her school is, but I wonder what it would be like if I had a completely new start. Would I still remain me? Or would I become someone else? I would have to become someone else, because I can't imagine me without Justin. It hurts to think about it. I imagine myself walking those halls, and the alone I feel there is so much worse than the alone I feel here. I remember the ocean, and know that no matter where I go, I want him to come with me. I feel silly, but I'm a little sad to see Amy go. As we head to the parking lot at the end of the day, I write down my email address and give it to her. While I'm doing this, Justin finds me. He seems so much better now that the day is over. And from the way he lingers, I know he wants to hang out, not just say goodbye. "Walk me to my car?" Amy asks. I look at Justin, wanting to make sure he'll wait.
"I'll get my car," he says.
It's a good thing he seems to be in a patient mood, because Amy has parked about as far from the school as you can get. As we walk over, I wonder what Justin is going to do now. I'm trying to figure it out when Amy breaks into my thoughts and says, "Tell me something nobody else knows about you." "What?" I ask. It's such a slumber party question. "It's something I always ask people. Tell me something about you that nobody else knows. It doesn't have to be major, just something." I decide to go with whatever comes first to my mind. "Okay. When I was 10, I tried to pierce my own ear with a sewing needle. I got it halfway through, and then I passed out. Nobody was home, so nobody found me. I just woke up with this needle halfway in my ear, drops of blood all over my shirt. I pulled the needle out, cleaned up, and never tried it again. It wasn't until I was 14 that I went to the mall with my mom and got my ears pierced for real. She had no idea. How about you?" There's a beat as she thinks about it, which is a little off. If this is a question she always asks, doesn't she always have an answer ready? After a few seconds, she says, "I stole Judy Blume's Forever from my sister when I was 8. I figured if it was by the author of Super Fudge, it had to be good. Well, I soon realized why she kept it under her bed. I'm not sure I understood it all, but I thought it was unfair that the boy would name his,
Oregon, and the girl wouldn't name hers, so I decided to give mine a name. I can't help but laugh, and also can't help but ask, what was its name? Helena. I introduced everyone to her at dinner that night. It went over really well. Helena. I can't figure if Justin would find this funny, too, or if he'd just find it weird. We're at Amy's car now. It was great to meet you, I tell her. Hopefully I'll see you around next year. Yeah, she says. It was great to meet you, too. She thanks me for taking her around, for introducing her to my friends, and for putting up with her questions. I tell her it wasn't any problem at all. Justin drives over and honks. I almost tell him I want to go back to the ocean. But instead, I decide to see if I can bring the ocean here. We go to his house like we always do, because my mom is always home at my house. We don't have a chance to talk on the way over, because I'm in my car following his. But even when we get there, we don't say much. He asks me if I want something to drink, and I tell him water. He steals some scotch, but not that much. I never mind if he has a little. I like the taste of it on his tongue. He sits down on the couch and turns on the TV. But I know what's going on. It's like he can't come out and say, let's make out. A few times he's started kissing me the minute we've gotten in the door, but usually he has to make sure no one's home, get used to the gravity of being home, before we can resist it a little. So most of the time, it starts like this, both of us watching the show, but not really watching, him leaning into me, or me leaning into him, putting our drinks down, a hand on a leg, an arm over a shoulder, bodies starting to confuse. He won't say that he wants something from me, but it's there in the air. It's there and understood between us as his hands go under my shirt and my hands touch his cheek, his ear, his hair. I return to him. He returns to me. But then it's not enough for us to balance like that. He pushes it. He's saying things, but they're not really directed at me. They're directed at what we're doing. They're part of what we're doing. The heat feels good. The touch feels good. But it doesn't feel like enough. Not for him, since he wants more and more and more. Not for me, because if it was enough, I wouldn't be thinking about whether or not it's enough. We aren't going all the way. Not on the couch, only in the bedroom, where there's a door to close, and protection to wear, and blankets to pull up when it's over, and we lie there, pleased. But we're still doing something. He does what he does when we're on the couch, and I do what I do when we're on the couch, and none of our clothes are totally on, and none of them are totally off. He starts to murmur, starts to moan, and yes, there's something he wants from me. There's something he really wants from me, and I am giving it to him, and he's giving it back to me. I want him to get that peak, because what I want more is the sweetness of breathing together afterward. He groans. His back shudders under my hand. He kisses me, once, twice, three times. We lie back. I find his heartbeat and lay my head there. He says more things. The TV is still on, and what he does next is what makes me grateful, what makes me think that maybe all of this is worth it, because instead of turning back to the TV, he turns it off. He stands up and gets me more water. He does not get himself more scotch. He comes back and returns to his place on the couch, then returns me to my place on his chest. We stay like that for a while, no longer in a rush, no longer wanting anything more than a quiet spot of nothing to share. Chapter 4.
I'm good. I wait until after school on Friday to ask about Steve's party.
Will you just stop?
Is his reply. Excuse me? I say. I don't think I deserve that. He shakes his head.
Sorry.
We're at my locker. I know he has to get to work. That's why I'm trying to figure this out now.
I'm just going to hate at least half the people there, he says. As long as you can deal with that, we can go. If Steve and Stephanie start attacking each other, do not expect me to calm him down, or take him outside, or shield her bitchiness from his bullshit. Just let me sit in the corner and drink and watch like everyone else.
They only fought that once, I argue. These are our friends. Most of the time they behave. Tequila just makes them mean. He snorts.
Jesus, Rhiannon, open your eyes.
You can do whatever you want at the party, I say. I'll drive, okay?
I'm telling you right now, if I go there, I'm going to get wasted.
I've been warned, I tell him. I know I've been warned. It's only when I'm driving over to pick him up on Saturday night that I wonder why I want to go to this party. Rebecca won't be there. She and Ben have a date night. Preston and his best friend Allie tend to avoid parties they find obnoxious. And while I'm friends with Stephanie, I have to agree with Justin that being the party's center of attention might not bring out her best behavior. Mostly, I guess, I feel that something new might happen if we go to the party. If we stay home, there's no chance that something new will happen. We get pizza before heading over. Apparently, Justin's father told him he couldn't go out unless his room was clean, and Justin left the house anyway. When I first asked Justin what his dad was like, all he'd say was military. I couldn't tell whether this meant his career or his attitude, or both. Now he's always saying,
please, God, don't let me turn into that man.
I think pretty much the same thing about my mom, so I guess we relate. On our way to Steve's, I ask Justin if he knows who else is going to be there.
Does it really matter? He asks. It's the same, whoever's there.
I don't think he's in the mood for me to argue, so I stay quiet. A song I like comes on the radio, and I start to sing along. He shoots me a look like I'm a crazy woman, and I stop. When we get there, he goes,
you know where to find me,
meaning wherever the alcohol is. He takes off as soon as I lock the car doors, acting like the party might run out of beer before he's made it inside, which, considering Steve's last party, isn't totally off base. Crowded. Already it feels like there are people everywhere. I don't recognize some of them. I see Stephanie for a brief moment. She gives me a squeal and a hug, then moves on to the next squeal and hug. I know I should go to the kitchen, get a drink, only one, and stay by my boyfriend's side. But I find myself wandering away from it instead. Steve stumbles past me. He must have started drinking early. I say hi. He tells me to make myself at home. It's really loud, some bitch-bashing rap competing with all the talking, making everyone louder. I head into the den and see a laptop there, hooked to the speakers. I look at the playlist and find that the song that's playing is called My Dick's Got Rights. The next song is called Naked Like You Want Me. I think about turning it down. I think about putting on Adele. I don't do anything. I look around and see Tiffany Chase talking to D'Amica Miller. I walk over and say hi.
Hi,
Tiffany shouts back over the music.
Yeah, hi,
D'Amica says. I realize the flaw in my plan is that I don't have anything to say to either of these girls. I almost tell Tiffany that I get now why she likes to take people around the school, but I don't think that's the right party thing to say. It'll sound like I want to be her, when that's not it at all.
I love your hair, I tell D'Amica. She recently added a red streak.
Thanks, D'Amica says back. Tiffany and D'Amica look at each other. I've clearly interrupted their conversation. I know I should uninterrupt it.
See you around, I say.
I drift off, but not that far. Again, I know I should head to the kitchen, but I don't. Next to the laptop, there are CDs, probably belonging to Steve's parents. I have no idea where they are right now. Adele is near the top. Having nothing better to do, I start to flip through. There's Kelly Clarkson, which makes me think of the drive to the ocean. And there's Fun, who we also heard.
I really like them,
someone says to me, pointing to the CD.
Do you?
I'm surprised to have been noticed. The boy talking to me looks totally out of place. He's worn a jacket and a tie to the party, like he's going straight from here to church in the morning. He looks really desperate to have someone to talk to, and at the same time, I feel this weird sense that he specifically wants to talk to me. Usually, this would make my guard go up, but for some reason, I decide not to brush him off.
Yeah, I say, holding up the CD. I like them too.
Quietly, he starts to sing Carry On, the same song Justin and I sang along to in the car. I decide to take this as a sign. Of what? I'm not sure.
I like that one in particular, the boy says.
Strange. There is something so familiar about him. It's in his eyes, or in the way he's looking at me. Harmless. I remind myself that talking to him is harmless.
Do I know you? I ask.
I'm Nathan, he says.
I tell him I'm Rhiannon.
That's a beautiful name,
he replies. And it's not just something to say, like, I love your hair.
Thanks, I say. I used to hate it, but I don't so much anymore.
Why?
It's just a pain to spell, I tell him. And because it's different, I don't tell him all the grief I got as a kid for it being so different, how badly I wished my parents had given me something easier. The fact that he seems so familiar is still nagging at me.
Do you go to Octavian? I ask.
He shakes his head.
No, I'm just here for the weekend, visiting my cousin.
Who's your cousin?
Steve.
Oh, that explains it, I tell him. And then, just like with Tiffany and D'Amica, I find I've completely run out of things to say. I mean, I could ask Nathan where he's from, how long he's here for, why he's wearing a tie, but I'd only be filling the time until I leave, and that doesn't seem fair. I'm ready to pull the plug and let the conversation die, but then he surprises me.
I hate my cousin, he says.
Scandal. But not really. Still, I'm curious why. He goes on.
I hate the way he treats girls. I hate the way he thinks he can buy all his friends by throwing parties like this. I hate the way that he only talks to you when he needs something. I hate the way he doesn't seem capable of love.
Wow. I can barely remember my own cousin's names. Nathan seems so intense about Steve.
Then why are you here? I ask.
Because I want to see it fall apart. Because when this party gets busted, and if it stays this loud, it will get busted. I want to be a witness. From a safe distance away, of course.
The boy's on fire. It's amusing. I decide to add more fuel.
And you're saying he's incapable of loving Stephanie? I ask.
They've been going out for over a year.
That doesn't mean anything, does it? I mean, being with someone for over a year can mean that you love them, but it can also mean you're trapped.
Trapped? How stupid. Because my first thought is, Stephanie is not nearly as trapped as I am, which is ridiculous. Neither of us is trapped. I wonder what would make Nathan say such a thing. He talks like he knows.
Speaking from experience? I ask.
There are many things that can keep you in a relationship, he says. His eyes are begging me to listen.
Fear of being alone. Fear of disrupting the arrangement of your life. A decision to settle for something that's okay because you don't know if you can get any better. Or maybe there's the irrational belief that it will get better, even if you know he won't change.
He. I guess Nathan is on the Preston side of things. He? I say, to make sure.
Yeah.
I see. Maybe this explains why I'm finding him so harmless, why I'm feeling so open to him. Girls don't need to be threatened by boys who are after boys. After a moment, he asks,
"That cool?"
"Completely," I assure him. I wonder if Steve knows.
"How about you? Seeing anyone?"
"Yeah," I say. Then, seeing where this is going, I add, "For over a year."
"And why are you still together? Fear of being alone? A decision to settle? An irrational belief that he'll change?"
Ha! I'm not about to tell him it's much more complicated than that. So instead, I say, "Yes, yes, and yes."
So...
But he can also be incredibly sweet, I add. And I know that, deep down, I mean the world to him. Those eyes don't let me out of it.
Deep down? That sounds like settling to me. You shouldn't have to venture deep down in order to get to love.
Enough. I don't know you. Stop. It sounds like Justin talking in my head, even though it's my voice.
Let's switch the topic, okay? I say. This isn't a good party topic. I liked it more when you were singing to me.
Justin pops into the doorway now, Corona in hand. He scans the room, sees me, looks a little happy, then sees that I'm talking to a guy and looks a little less happy.
So who's this?
He asks, coming over. Don't worry, Justin, I say. He's gay.
Yeah, I can tell from the way he's dressed. What are you doing here?
Nathan, this is Justin, my boyfriend. Justin, this is Nathan.
Hi,
Nathan says. Justin lets it hang for a second, then asks,
You seen Stephanie? Steve's looking for her. I think they're at it again.
There's an I told you so embedded in his voice, and he did tell me so. I give him back an I told you so what.
Maybe she went to the basement,
I said.
Nah, they're dancing in the basement.
Dancing. The last time the two of us danced was probably a very tipsy night at Preston's house a few months ago. I miss it. Want to go down there and dance? I ask.
Hell no. I didn't come here to dance. I came here to drink.
Charming, I say. What was I even thinking, asking him? Then I figure I have another opportunity. Do you mind if I go dance with Nathan? He takes another look at Nathan's tie, jacket.
You sure he's gay? I'll sing you show tunes if you want me to prove it,
Nathan volunteers. Justin slaps him on the back.
No, dude, don't do that, okay? Go dance.
Then, with a Corona salute, he heads back to the kitchen. You don't have to if you don't want to, I tell Nathan. I know I wouldn't be crazy about the idea of dancing with someone I didn't know, so I can't really expect him to be into it. But he says,
I want to. I really want to.
I don't know why this makes sense, but it does. So I lead the way to the basement. There's a different kind of noise down there, dance noise. In a total Stephanie touch, all the regular lights have been replaced with red bulbs. It feels like we're at the center of a beating heart. It's hard to see who's here, but I spot Steve making his own pre-hangover moves in the corner. I call out to him, "Hey, Steve, I like your cousin." He nods, so I guess the feelings Nathan expressed aren't entirely mutual.
"Have you seen Stephanie?"
he yells. "No," I yell back, figuring it's probably best if they stay separate until they come to their more sober senses. Maybe because he's gay, I think Nathan will leap into the dancing. But instead, he looks vaguely terrified. I remind myself that he's surrounded by strangers. Then I also remind myself that I am one of those strangers, even if it doesn't feel that way. I pulled him down here, so it's on me to make him feel at home. I find myself thinking that dancing is just another form of singing along, and all I have to do is get him to sing along, the same way he was singing along to the song that wasn't playing upstairs. He's swaying now, blocked in by all the people around us and the space they're taking up. I try to ignore that and focus only on him and the music. I create a space to draw him into, and it works. I can feel it working. His eyes matching my eyes, his smile matching my smile. The song is taking the lead. The song is telling us how to move. The song is guiding his hands to my back, to my waist. The song is generating the heat and giving it to our bodies. The song is pulling me closer. The song and his eyes. Then a new song. He starts to sing along, and that makes me happy. It's all making me happy, to be so loose in a place that's so crowded, to not feel Justin tugging me in any direction, to give up on everything. "You're not bad," I yell to Nathan. "You're amazing," he yells back. More songs swimming through the red, bodies coming and going. Nobody shouting my name, nobody needing me or asking for anything. I lose track of time, of what I'm thinking, of where I am and who I am. I even lose track of the song. I lose track of everything but the boy in the tie across from me, who is releasing himself as well. I can tell, as one who knows. Then it all ends. A song is cut short. I feel like a cartoon character holding for a minute in the air, then looking down and falling to earth. The regular lights go on. They've been there all along, beside the red. I hear Stephanie's voice yelling that the party's over, that the neighbors have called the cops. Even though it's not my fault, I want to apologize to Nathan, because it's over. It has to be over. "I have to find Justin," I tell him. "Are you going to be okay?" He nods. "Look," he says. His hand is still on my wrist. "Would it be weird for me to ask you for your email?" I wouldn't have thought it was weird, except for him asking if it was weird. "Don't worry," he adds. "I am still 100% homosexual." "That's too bad," I say. Then, before my inner flirt can make more of a fool of herself, I give him my email address, take his pen, and write his email address down on a receipt. The basement is nearly empty, and there's the sound of sirens in the distance. Stephanie isn't making it up. We really need to leave. "Time to go," I say. We're both staying in the space we created, not wanting to leave it, even though the lights are on.
"You're not going to let your boyfriend drive, are you?"
Nathan asks. "That's sweet," I say. "No, I control the keys." There's chaos at the top of the stairs, and we're separated before we can say goodbye. Justin isn't in the kitchen, so I figure he's already at the car. Sure enough, he's pacing there, waiting for me.
"Where were you?"
he accuses as I unlock the door. "The basement," I tell him when we're in the car. You knew that. He curses a little, but I know he's cursing at the cops, not me. I pull out, relieved that we didn't park in the driveway, where things are all backed up. We're going to make it, I assure him.
You're beautiful,
he slurs. You're drunk, I say.
You're beautiful anyway,
he tells me. Then he puts back the seat and closes his eyes. I wait a few minutes. Then I discover a song I like on the radio and sing along. As Justin snores, I find myself hoping Nathan made it out okay. Chapter 5. I know Justin's not working on Sunday, so I'm hoping we'll hang out at least a little. But he doesn't wake up until 1, and from what I can tell from the texts he sends, he's not in good shape. I offer to come over and make him whatever hangover cure he wants. He texts me back 2 hours later to say that all he can do today is sleep. He can even sleep through his parents yelling about all his sleeping. Get shit-faced, then face the shit. I know the routine. It's not like I've never been there. I just don't go there as often as he does. I asked him about it before, not confrontational, just curious.
I drink to feel better, he told me. And if I feel worse the next day, it's still worth it, because I still got to feel better for a little bit, which is more than I would have done sober.
There are times I can make him feel like that, too. There are times when I know he's drunk on me, not just when we're making out. There are other times I can make him forget about everything else, which is a power nobody else has with him. I know this. Because my day is empty of him. It's empty. My mother asks if I want to go to the grocery store with her, but I know if I do, I'll only want to buy things I shouldn't eat. My dad is on the computer, doing work, avoiding us to provide for us. I think of emailing Nathan from last night, but that thought passes. I doubt I'll ever see him again. Whatever we shared is gone, because it was destined to be gone from the minute it started. Distraction. I turn on the TV. Housewives and nature shows. An episode of Friends I've seen 100 times. Nothing I want to watch, followed by nothing I want to watch, followed by nothing I want to watch. I imagine doing this forever. An infinity of nothing I want to watch. It's a day like that. I call Justin. I can't help myself. I want to talk to him so bad. I know I won't convince him to stop being hungover. I won't convince him to get out of bed and do something with me, or even stay in bed and do something with me. I would be happy to lie there next to him.
I've decided that whiskey is not my friend, he says.
Still bad? I ask.
Better, but still bad. The day has completely crapped out.
It's all right. I've been catching up on my TV watching.
Fuck. I wish I were there with you. Being sick is so fucking boring.
I wish you were here, too. I could come over if you want.
Nah. I just have to ride this one out. It wouldn't be fair to ask you to be around me when I'm so sick of being around me.
I'm willing.
I know, and I appreciate it, but it's not going to happen today.
The fact that he sounds disappointed makes my own disappointment a little easier to live with, even if it still leaves me alone for the rest of the day. Alone. The only thing that prevents me from feeling completely alone is knowing that I have someone, that if I really need him, he will be there.
I'm going to go now,
he says to me. I don't point out he's not actually going to go anywhere. Neither of us is going to go anywhere. See you tomorrow, I say, because I know we're not going to talk again tonight.
Yeah, see ya.
My mother comes home, and I help her put away the groceries. We make dinner. We don't talk about anything. She talks, for sure. She talks and talks and talks. but we don't talk at all. When I get back to my room, I check my email on my phone. I am surprised to find a message from Nathan.
Hi, Rhiannon. I just wanted to say that it was lovely meeting you and dancing with you last night. I'm sorry the police came and separated us. Even though you're not my type, gender-wise, you're certainly my type, person-wise. Please keep in touch. N.
I smile. It's so nice. I wonder if he's single, even though I can't really imagine Preston going for him. Preston likes guys who are trendier, or at least don't wear ties to parties. I also wonder about being his type, person-wise. What does that mean, really? Where does that get us? Shut up, I tell myself. A nice guy tries to be friendly with me, and I immediately think, why bother? There is something seriously wrong with me. The reason to bother is because he's a nice guy. I hit reply, but I don't know what to write. I feel I need to make an excuse for not writing to him first. I'm sure the piece of paper with his email address on it is still in my pocket. I also want to sound like someone who gets this kind of email all the time. It's weird, because the Rhiannon who comes out in what I write doesn't sound like I normally sound. She sounds like she's really enjoying herself. Nathan, I'm so glad you emailed, because I lost the slip of paper that I wrote your email on. It was wonderful talking and dancing with you too. How dare the police break us up? You're my type, person-wise, too. Even if you don't believe in relationships that last longer than a year. I'm not saying you're wrong, BTW. Jury's still out. I never thought I'd say this, but I hope Steve has another party soon. If only so you can bear witness to its evil. Love, Rhiannon. I don't know why I write love like that. It's just what I always write. Everything else seems cold. But now I'm worried I sound too eager. Not eager in the same way I'm eager with Justin. Just eager for whatever's next. As soon as I hit send, the emptiness returns. I'm back into the day I was having. Maybe this is what alone really is. Finding out how tiny your world is and not knowing how to get anywhere else. I go on Facebook. I read Gawker. I watch some music on YouTube, including the fun song from the day with Justin, the one Nathan sang back to me. I feel stupid doing that. I know Nathan wouldn't find it stupid. Somehow, I know that. And I know Justin would find it stupid. I asked him once if he thought we had a song. I mean, most couples have a song. But he said he had no idea, and that he didn't even understand why we'd want one, anyway. I told myself he was right. We didn't need one. Every song could be ours. But now, I want one. It's not enough that every song can make me think of him. I want one, just one, that will make him think of me. Chapter 6. The hangover hangs over Monday as well. It's like his personality has spoiled from lack of use. He's in school, but he still thinks he's in bed. I can't take it personally that he's not happy to see me, because he's not happy to see any of us. He won't say more than two words in any sentence, and after a few minutes, I decide to leave him alone. A lot of our Mondays are like this. Our Monday at the beach seems like much longer than a week ago. What is wrong with me? How was your weekend? Rebecca asks when I get to third period. How wasn't my weekend? I reply. What does that mean? I don't know. I just mean that not much happened. How was the party? It was fine. I danced with Steve's gay cousin. Justin got shit-faced, The cops came. Steve has a gay cousin? I didn't know that. I don't think they're close. Well, if he's still around, Ben and I were going to hang out with Steve and Stephanie during assembly period this afternoon. Just get coffee or something. Wanna come? I notice she hasn't invited Justin. It'll be a triple date, only I'm not being asked to bring my date. Can I get back to you? I ask. Rebecca's not stupid. She knows why I'm not committing.
Whenever, she tells me. We'll be there either way, although it would be great to have some time with you. I feel I haven't seen you in ages.
Now it's clear that Justin's being deliberately excluded, because Rebecca sees me all the time. It's just that he's always by my side when she does. I find him right before lunch.
What are you doing? I ask.
What does it look like I'm doing?
He asks back.
It looks like he is switching his books in his locker. It looks like he's about to head to lunch.
What do you want to be doing? I ask. He slams the locker shut.
I want to be playing video games, he says. That work for you?
Want to get out of here and do something? There's that assembly 7th and 8th period. Nobody will notice we're gone. I am looking for that spark. If it's gone out, I am trying to relight it, because I have a spark inside of me, too, and right now, it wants to be bright.
What the fuck has gotten into you?
He asks.
If we could just leave, don't you think I would have done it by now? Jesus! It's bad enough to be here. Why do you have to keep pointing it out?
That's not what I meant, I tell him. I just thought it could be like last week.
Last week? I don't even know what you're talking about.
The beach? The ocean? He shakes his head, like I'm making things up.
Enough, okay? Just stop.
So I stop. I swallow the spark and feel it scratch as it goes down. We eat with our friends. Preston asks about the party, and Justin tells him it sucked. In his version, skank girls kept crowding the kitchen. Stephanie yelled at him for putting his feet on a table. Then the police came, because the police clearly have nothing better to do. Preston then asks me how my night was. I tell him that my night sucked too. I don't tell him about the basement or about the dancing. No. My version transforms itself into Justin's version. He doesn't even notice, but I do it anyway. I am disappearing. This is the thought that occurs to me. I am disappearing. Like nothing I say or do matters. My life has become so tiny that it's completely unseen. The only way I can think to fight this is to text Rebecca and tell her I'm free to hang out after school. He doesn't care. I tell him I made plans for during the assembly, and he genuinely doesn't care. He doesn't ask to be invited along. He doesn't even ask me what the plans are. He'll go home and play video games. He won't text me unless I text him first. I know all this. But why do I still feel surprised, as if it isn't meant to be this way? Rebecca decides she's in the mood for ice cream and convinces the rest of us we're in the mood for ice cream, too, even though it's not summer and the nearest good ice cream place is about 20 minutes away. It is, as we expected, surprisingly easy to get out of the assembly. We figure the visiting author won't miss us too much, since none of us have ever heard of him. Rebecca, Ben, and I pile into her car, and Stephanie and Steve meet us there. Steve is wearing the effects of the weekend more obviously than Stephanie is. She looks like she spent the past 2 days at the gym. We get our cones and head for a table. When we start talking, it's not about the party, but everything that happened after, all the cleanup that had to be done, all of the bullshit with the police, who didn't end up arresting anyone. They just wanted to break up the party, and they did a good job of it. Stephanie admits she was a little relieved. There are some people, she says, who will never leave a party unless the police come. From the sound of her voice, I know I'm supposed to know who she's talking about. I have no idea. I really liked your cousin, I tell Steve. He kinda saved the night for me. Steve looks confused.
My cousin? When did you meet my cousin?
At the party. Nathan. I almost add, your gay cousin, but then I realize I have no idea if Steve knows. Now Steve laughs.
At my party? I don't think so. All of my cousins are like 8, and none of them are named Nathan.
I don't understand what he's saying. But I met him, I say lamely. Oh, dear. Rebecca jumps in, patting my hand. It sounds like you met someone who said he was Steve's cousin. But why would he say that? Stephanie shrugs. Who knows? Guys are weird. What's hurting me is how honest he seemed, how real. Now it's like I've made him up. He was wearing a tie, I say. I think he was the only guy wearing a tie.
That dude, Steve laughs. I totally saw him. He's not my cousin, but he was definitely there.
I wonder if Nathan is really his name. I wonder if he's really gay. I wonder why the universe is doing this to me. I can't believe he lied, I say.
Again, Stephanie chimes in, guys are weird.
And certainly you're used to a little lying, Rebecca adds. This guy probably liked you and didn't know how to deal with it. That happens. It's not the worst kind of lie. I think she's trying to make me feel better, but I'm stuck on that first part. Certainly you're used to a little lying. Justin never lies to me, I say. Rebecca plays dumb. Who said anything about Justin? I know what you meant, and I'm telling you, Justin can ignore me and say the wrong things and go into his moods, but he never, ever lies to me. I know you don't think we have much, but we do have that. Rebecca and Stephanie shoot a look at each other, clearly not believing me. Ben is checking his phone. Steve still seems amused that some guy crashed his party pretending to be his cousin. I hate this feeling. My so-called friends thinking they know my life better than I do. And I hate it even more this time because I thought I'd had the opposite with Nathan.